of two eyes. Huh? Do you understand the game a bit? Yeah, have a look.
I'm not saying anything to you in particular because I know you're not too accurate with your reporting.
That's what you paid for.
So you're saying I should resign? So you're saying I should resign?
I think
that's your opinion.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's my opinion.
Okay, fine.
Are you going to resign then?
No, of course I'm not going to resign.
I simplify things next time.
Good evening and welcome to TNC, the National Curriculum. What a show we have for you in fun, bite-sized, less than 90-minute chunks like we delivered last week. Everyone doubted us last week. And look, how does it
nobody
feel?
Nobody believed in us. Nobody believed in us outside the club.
Exactly.
Nobody said we could do it.
And how does it feel to have egg on your face, my friends, with you? You guys will never do it under 90. We did it. We did it.
We shocked the world. We shocked the world. We showed the world that we can do 90-minute podcasts.
With me, as you probably have heard him already multiple times, Joey Lynch. Joey, how are you doing today?
I'm going very well. I'm looking forward to this podcast. I'm going to try to bring a pussy mentality to this podcast as opposed to an ultra one, because apparently the pussy ones win football games.
That was weird. You know what? The wonder is, again, it was kind of like that thing where, like, amazing tifo. You're like, oh, man, the RBB are sick. This is amazing. What a tifo. And then what a stupid sign to put up. It actually reminded me of the last Sydney Derby that I went to when they were trying to get up the, what it was like, something about rats. Rats in the, like, different
rats
cage or
ship?
Something. No, it was like different cage, same rats or something, because the stadium had changed, right?
But
it took them ages to get it up, so it just looked like they were holding up a sign that said same rats, which was like, I don't understand, guys. Are you calling yourselves rats? What is going on?
Nick Devano,
you're here with us this evening. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. It's it's been an interesting weekend. Looking forward to getting into it, you know. Can't complain too much down here in Melbourne town. It's all going well.
All right. Well, it is hot here in Sydney. Not too hot. I have a shirt on today. But look, the most important thing is the comments that are coming in. Lazar 11 odds on starting on time. All right. Look, we're working on a few things. We're working on trying to keep the show shorter, the show funner. But also at the same time, you know, we can't get it all right on the first thing. But thank you so much for all your comments. Nicholas Webster asked, why is Ante in Alaska? I have no idea what you're referring to.
Where the aliens dropped him off, mate. It's where
there's the UFO aliens.
Yeah, you know, the UFOs that are happening in Montana right now, they're all talking about that there's UFOs in America. Maybe that's the one that's taken Ante.
Yeah, that's a very good point. FB Skippy already with the Debano pun. Debano's back in the house. Toro's asked, Joey's wearing 1880s Corinthians shirt. I mean, I wish. I think it might be an MPL shirt. Joey, what do you want?
It's Heidelberg United special anniversary kit that they had for their, I think it was their 60th anniversary a few years ago that they sold. So Alexander the Great Football Club.
Jack Tuhill asks, as obviously this is an ESPN podcast, so we do have to get a Super Bowl reference in. Super Bowl is on tomorrow. Watch it on ESPN. Can Buddy Franklin kick the winning goal in the Super Bowl and win the A-League men's grand final? Discuss. Guys, you're down in Victoria. Who do you think in AFL could make the cross-code switch and dominate Gridiron?
It's already happened, mate. Sav Rocca.
Oh, it's true. Yes. And Ben Gray.
There's an Aussie rules player playing in the Super Bowl tomorrow. Aaron Sipos, who used to play for St. Kilda. He played like 20 games for him. He's the punter for the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. Not kidding.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I feel like that should be a big deal.
That's AFL reference of the day. Who could? That's a good question. I mean, in what position, though? What are we talking about? Are we talking about as a punter or as like an actual, you know, not playing in special teams?
Yee asked, not sure how you're going to keep it under 90 minutes with the Super Bowl preview you need to do. Now, guys, I'm going to ask you at the end of the show for your Super Bowl preview, but I'm also going to ask you who is playing because I have no idea. But good luck to the Philadelphia Eagles
against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, okay. I'll choose the team where I prefer to live, and Philadelphia, good on you guys. All right, let's get into the A-League and what happened today. MacArthur 2, Wellington 1. Bulls first win win in over a month. Knicks 2 points off ninth. All right. So, you know, I just like to remind people that they are. A lot of people are like, you said they'd be ninth. They'd never be ninth. They're only 2 points off ninth. Let's just relax a bit. But in this game, incredible scenes. Three penalties, all three saved. Once the third penalty was saved, I don't know about you, Nick DeBarno, but I was like, all I want to see now is penalties. Just like, give me as many penalties as possible and let's see if we can save 10 in one game. What did you make of this match?
It was fun. Like, I mean, for all the reasons that you wouldn't think, like the fact that there was, you know, three penalties saved. It looked like at least at one point when Krajev scored, I thought, oh, geez, Wellington's going to, you know, after what we saw last week with MacArthur, this could be another cricket score. But to their credit, I mean, Philip Curto turned things around. I mean, before obviously Davila scored the goal, but Curto making those two saves, talk about, you know, sort of that psychological edge. You miss two penalties in a minute. Like, Jesus, like you're thinking, how the hell are we going to beat this guy? And to MacArthur's credit, they did well in the second half to come away with the win. Good on Moody Najjar getting his goal. Could have had another one, which was a bit unlucky, was offside. But, geez, it was just a weird game of football. But, like, looking at the table now, guys, what the hell is going on? I mean, you got three teams all on 21 points from 6 to 8. As you mentioned, Stoll, 4-point gap, 5-point gap between Western United and Wellington. I mean, that goes to show second last all the way through to then. Like, second last, technically even victory can still make the finals this year. Like,
I crunched the numbers. 85% of the league is separated by 10 points. All right? That's how tight this league is, which is also why that, you know, Sydney goes from like Corica out, get out, Bimby, you're terrible, to now they're in the finals race, a bit of form. Like, all these teams, except for basically Melbourne City and Melbourne Victory, opposite ends of the table, they're going from crisis to, oh, we've got some form going. I think we're going to do it, make a run in the finals. So it's a very kind of interesting time. And it is actually a really good race to finish between 2nd and 10th. Not really a title race, but a race to finish 2nd and 10th. Joey, what were your thoughts on this match? And by the way, can I just say some great comments?
Is it going to be the one I think it is?
Yeah, I think it is. Look, no, we've got to give a shout out to our people are watching on YouTube, people are watching on Facebook. But look, for Noah, like really, she's typed it out. So I feel like if you put in all this effort,
she didn't really type that out. It's a copy and paste.
Hey, she typed it out. And she says, hey, this is totally harmless and has no side effects. Yeah, are you in love with someone and she doesn't reciprocate the up gesture? I don't know what that means. Is that a position that maybe you're trying with a loved one? Frustrated because of a break? And then the heart thing, then you can use this to attract the lover into your life. Thank you, Fano. We've been a wrestling podcast. We've been a food podcast. We've been a weather podcast, a dating podcast. Let us know, TNC people, your tips for dating. Let us know in the comments. And,
don't. Stop.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Don't open the can of worms, mate. Look what you've done. You've dropped the honey and here come the bees, man. Like, seriously.
Look, Fanoa, she's a big fan and she obviously, Fanoa, if you're trying to get me, I'm happily in a relationship, but you know, DeBarno's single, so right. maybe some of that. Joey, talk about some football, please.
It was interesting looking at the Bulls since Milos Stojcevski has taken over. It's interesting. You can clearly tell that he is a former NPL youth coach. I mean, you look at the side today, Moody Najjar getting the start up front, and he's now got two in his last two games. He's got an assist, another goal disallowed. So one would imagine that Moody Najjar is going to get another start again. He's got Holman in there, Jed Drew getting the start. We had debuts today for Oliver Jones. Ali Agla's playing more often. I think we're really seeing what the more of the profile that is going to define the Bulls throughout the rest of the season. That age profile is going to drop because, I mean, this is ostensibly why you appoint Milos Stojcevski and why you don't make any signings during the January transfer window. Now, obviously, Dwight York leaving probably blew up maybe one or two transfers that you were going to make. However, the fact that you didn't make them means that you've got to get these players from somewhere, and they obviously trust Stojcevski, and Stojcevski, more importantly, trusts these young players to come in and do some form of a job. So I thought that was interesting. And I mean, it is going to, you know, make for intriguing viewing throughout the rest of the season as we try to figure out what sort of side the Bulls are going to be under Stojcevski. Because they've been multipolar throughout their entire time as an entity. In year one, they wanted the ball a lot. In year two, under Ante Milicic, they didn't want the ball at all. In year three, under Dwight York, they were cooking during the Australia Cup, and then they sort of morphed into your classic, please don't give us the ball. We want to play on the counter-attack team under Dwight York. Now, Stojowski has talked about wanting the ball more. He says he wants his players to be braver on the ball.
Who doesn't say that?
I know.
Simeone's the one who's honest and he's like, we don't want the ball. Every other one of them is like, yeah, of course I want to play nice.
He expanded on that a little more after the Melbourne City game about how he wants his players to be braver with the ball and he wants to, do more things with the ball. Not just we want the ball. It's like, it's we want the ball so we can do this. Was sort of what Stojowski was talking about. So, and I mean,
and
you look at
48% possession at home today. So, not exactly dominating the ball.
Well, but it's creeping up compared to what they were under Dwight York. If you look at their season averages, even at home, it was very low. So, and who knows? Maybe he's been telling Porky Pies and this is just, they're going to turn into another team playing on the contra, don't give us the ball. Yeah. But I'm interested to see what happens with the Bulls moving forward because, I mean, as we said, the table's so tight, they could easily be playing finals football.
Yeah. Hey, look, we had some really good work last week in the comments, people doing research for us. The moment has said via YouTube, what is the record for missed penalties in an A-League game? Now, we are currently, we're doing a show right now, so we can't look that information up. But if you're at home, you're listening, you're watching, if you could just maybe do a bit of research yourself and let us know in the comments, maybe ask
Is research
Andy
code
Howe.
For, yeah, asking Andy Howe.
Yeah, ask Andy Howe. I don't know if there's some ultimate A-League website where they have that information, please go for it. But otherwise, yeah, we'd love to know what is the record for most missed penalties in a three would be hard to beat. Like, I feel like we would remember four. Some good comments as well coming in off the back of Fanoa's post. Here we go. Fanoa joins TNC on a 3-year fixed deal. Also, Nick stole to start a TNC charity calendar with his shirt off. The charity might be anyone taking any interest in that. Was the Fanoa comment from Yee? Was the Fanoa comment in reference to the Corica Rudin breakup? Yeah, I mean that got pretty feisty and kind of leads us in to talk about the Saturday night game, Western Sydney Wanderers 0, Sydney FC 1. I believe that was their first win at the Wanderers' home ground since 2018. And look, it comes back to, it's really important that we don't overreact here. But what I want to know, guys, is do you think Max Burgess will go to Barcelona or Real Madrid in this upcoming summer window? Because obviously they'll both be chasing him. There'll be huge offers on the table. Blank checks will just be flying. Barca will pull as many levers as possible to sign the next Messi. I think even Marcelo was there. He's played in France last season. He's played for Lyon and he was thought, oh, he had flashbacks. He was like, oh, no, I left France. I left Messi. I thought I'd never see him again. And then, boom, another left footer. Devano. Hey,
not even that. Marcelo. I think Morgan Schneiderlin as well was having complete sort of flashbacks as well to playing against PSG last year. He's like, I thought I got away from Messi. I thought I got away from Mbappe. I thought I got away from Neymar. And he's Max Burgess absolutely cooking. Hey, you didn't even say it. He could go to PSG. Who knows, man? Honestly. Nah, true. But look. In all seriousness, I mean, what a goal it was. The way he sort of, is able... That's the best of Max Burgess right there. And that little microcosm, that moment in itself. I mean, how he was able to get the ball from underneath him, sort of dribble in those tight spaces and fire that shot with not much space at all. And that was an absolute rocket past Lawrence Thomas. And to his credit, I mean, he's taken his chance in the team. I mean, he's been in and out of the team. He's been played out of position. Now he's playing in a midfield three. It's working for him. We see the benefits of him of just playing a player in their right role and being allowed to flourish like that. I mean, he probably doesn't have the engine. I mean, you don't usually see him play out 90. I think Steve Carrick has spoken about that quite a bit, that, he probably needs to work on his engine. And towards the end of the game, he was giving the ball away in some moments. But, hey, he was trying things. I mean, it wasn't risk-averse. He was actually trying to make stuff happen and make something happen for Sydney. But all in all, great spectacle yesterday. The spice for the Sydney Derby is really back now. If you're not excited for the third Sydney Derby, I don't know what the hell else to tell you after that. You got the beef between the coaches after the game. It's really set the tone now for this third meeting. You got Western Sydney and Sydney FC actually being top six sides on the table right now. You know, when have we seen that? It's been so rare throughout time that both teams are actually playing for something, not one team that's sort of, or the early season meetings, or when it gets towards the end of the year and the Wanderers have been struggling and Sydney were flying. It's now both teams really jostling for a final spot. And on top of that, I mean, you've got this, you've got the ledgers even, the 1-0s, and now you've got this Rudin Corica back and forth, which is fantastic for the theatre. It makes it, you know, when they play again in March, you think about it, it's another 4 weeks into the season. It's going to be probably even more stakes on the line. You'd think that if things keep going in this trajectory, both teams will be in the top six. It's going to be a cracking affair at the new Allianz. I honestly can't wait for it. And yesterday was a perfect teaser. And we even got Borrello after the game, you know, teeing off on 10. I think it's great. I think it's great that we see more of this sort of stuff, more theatre, more excitement. We need that sort of stuff in the game. More fun, 100%. As you said last week. Make Australian football fun. This is what makes Australian football more fun.
Look, two things. You're exactly right. The Make Australian Football Fun Society officially endorses any beef between Sydney and the Wanderers. So any Ninkovic beef, any Borrello beef. I love that Borrello was talking smack after the game, especially because he was acting like the Wanderers haven't stolen points all this season, being the lesser, like not being as good as the other team and getting the win. And he was like, well, I just didn't think they deserved it. Oh, man. How many games have you guys won this season where you haven't necessarily deserved it? Joey, what did you make of all the kind of the controversy, the, you know, ex-teammates, Bimby and Rudes going at each other's throats and the derby in general?
On the spectacle and on the theatre aspect of it, of course I'm a massive fan of it. I mean, we talked earlier in this season about, you know, asking why clubs would try to downplay rivalries over some, you know, given the ecosystem that they exist in. You know, the Sydney claiming MacArthur's not a derby rival when it's a closed league, so you sort of have to have these derby rivalries because that's the nature of the system. But, and it's the same thing for Western Sydney and Sydney FC. I think I'm a huge fan of it, stilted as it might be. You know, like Marco Rudan coming out the week prior and talking, you know, the battlers of the West versus the the bourgeoisie, the white collar of Sydney's East and all of that sort of stuff. I don't give a toss if, you know, you can bust out Sydney's demographic information. Well, according to the last census, actually, the median income in Parramatta is actually higher than the median. I don't give a toss. You know, that's not, you know, I don't care about the demographics. It's just, it's a narrative. Football is built on narrative and spectacle and emotion. I mean, like, leave that stuff to the demographers, you know, and just focus on, you know, your side winning football games. I mean, I bet Sydney fans, you know, don't really give two hoots about what Marco Rudan's saying about geopolitical breakdowns of Sydney now that they've actually won the derby. So give me all of that theatre, give me all of that nonsense, because it's just good and it gets people involved. It gets, you know, casuals and the like, the mythical casuals. You don't need to give them specialty rounds and all that. You need to give them two teams that hate each other, because everybody wants to watch the base instincts, the gladiatorial contest, or everybody wants to see two sides that hate each other going at it. As for the game itself, it's interesting, you know, watching Western Sydney chase in the game, having to serve as the very proactive team down a deficit. They did have a lot of the ball and, you know, goal disallowed, but given the amount of the ball that they had and the talent they have, don't think they created as many opportunities as, you know, probably the stat sheet would suggest, or, you know, those clear-cut opportunities. I don't think Sydney were ever, well, Sydney were obviously fearful of coughing up the lead, but I don't think they were ever in, you know, mortal fear of coughing up the lead, if you know what I mean. So, you see, it was exercising game management from the Harbour-siders, which, you know, Marco Rudan coming out and, you know, taking pot shots at Steve Corica in the aftermath as a result of, but that's what the game was. Now, the question is, you know, is the Sydney derby basically who scores first wins? Maybe.
I mean, just right now, I think both these teams don't create a hell of a lot, and Sydney also have kind of, it seems like they've been working the last couple of weeks really kind of trying to be more solid and you know, and also look, the red card was a factor in the game as well. So I think there's an element there. A couple of comments coming in. Philip Rollo, our friend across the ditch, said, "Well, Bayern Munich signed Max Burgess's backup at the Knicks." How's Sarpreet Singh going? I'd love to know because he was such a good player. And still, Edmund Al Young, Max Burgess equals the new Tom Rogic. Dabana, there's a similarity in style of play, would you say?
Yeah, is Max Burgess the youngest 27-year-old, I guess, or 28-year-old in Australian football? Because it feels like he is so much younger than he actually is because he hasn't been around the traps for as long. He's been sort of in and out of the A-League system playing NPL football and sort of floating around.
Really, he's played for a lot of A-League teams. People forget he played for the Jets. He played, obviously, for Western United. He played for Wellington. He was at Sydney FC back in the Graham Arnold days. So this kind of be interesting. Jack Toohill says, is Max Burgess in danger of becoming a player that's too good for the A-League? I love that Max, a few weeks ago, we were struggling to get him starting, to get him off the bench. He didn't play in the last Sydney derby. Now Jack is asking, and I agree with you, Jack, is Max Burgess too good for this league? Yeah, he's too good for every league, mate. He's too good for the Prem. But never give it a go at a higher level. Dabana, do you think they've at least found kind of his right position, you know, which isn't kind of high and wide? It's more in that kind of attacking midfield zone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it suits him to a T. We've seen it whenever he's played in that position, how much better Sydney look when he's in that role. And I think as well now the fact that Sydney didn't, you know, go out and basically replace Patrick Yazbek, since now he's obviously off to Viking as well to join Daggers in Norway. But, you know, I think that there will be opportunity and hopefully he can stick in the starting lineup because the midfield three going into the season that Corica went with was that Bratton, Yazbek, Caceres three. Now it looks like, even though now it looks like the roles have changed, that sort of Caceres is playing a bit deeper, Burgess is playing a bit more forward, that Max Burgess has made that position his own. Just something really small on the Wanderers, guys. I mean, the one thing that I did notice as well is, you know, even though they went down to 10, I actually thought that they looked better when they brought on certain players. Nicholas Milanovic in his debut, I thought, was really, really good. You know, considering just making the move from Western United, provided a lot of energy. You know, I think it's probably about time. I reckon it'll be a matter of time before we see Morgan Schneiderlin starting a game for the Wanderers. I mean, didn't necessarily blow the house down, but I think that maybe his inclusion might allow for Romain Amalfitano or Milos Ninkovic to come into the team. Amalfitano to play a bit more forward, Ninkovic to play as the 10. They've got that option there as well. But the surprising thing I thought was, even though they were down to 10, why didn't they bring Cassini Yenge on? I mean, they needed someone inside the box. Now, crossing the ball into Brandon Borrello a lot at the end there. Cassini Yenge's, you know, a physical specimen. Like, you're going to cross to him. He's got the size. He can create a bit of chaos inside the box, especially if it's going to become that crossing game towards the end. And you've got 10 players on the pitch. Go for it. Bring him on. I know he's had his problems with injuries, but he's a guy for the big occasion. Like, I know that, like, it's such a cliche to throw around, but you remember the last time he played in the Sydney Derby, how important he was in that game and how integral he was. Someone with that bit of unpredictability in that last period of the game when the Wanderers were chasing it, I would have just thrown him on and just let him cook. Like, why not? Like, I mean, risk losing 2-0 to potentially jag a point.
Well, it's interesting, the two kind of big players of the last derby for the Wanderers was Ninkovic and Yenge, and both of them kind of start on the bench. I do wonder with Yenge, I don't know if there's a fitness issue or something there. I know he was on the bench, so you'd think he'd be okay. But yeah, I agree with you. If he was available to play and if he is on the bench, you have to assume that he is, then why not? Because he is that type of player that, you know, 5 minutes to go, he might be the one to kind of unlock something for you. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. But like you say, it just sets it up perfectly for the third derby. Joey, you wanted to mention something about Corica?
Well, yeah, we're just talking about Max Burgess finding his preferred position. I mean, who would have thought it only took Steve Corica completely changing his style and signing two high-profile wingers that prevent him from playing Max Burgess on the wing before we actually had him start playing in his natural position. So, wonders will never cease. But also, you know, you're talking about like the players breaking down and Yenge not being in the team and all that stuff. Did remind me that, you know, in a way, this is rude. I know he came in mid-season last year after the sacking of Carl Robinson, but this is sort of Marco Rudan's second year in charge of the Wanderers now. And it is worth bearing in mind because we did see second year at Western United, some players broke down. There was a bit of friction. So it's going to be interesting to see as we head towards the end of the season, what sort of happens with the Wanderers on that front. We've already seen Rami Nazarene shipped off during the January transfer window. Reports from, you know, those in the Wanderers camp saying that he had a bad attitude. So something, obviously, a bit of a personality clash there. So I think that's just going to be something to watch going season, because there's never been any question about Marco Rudan's coaching aptitude as a tactical figure. It's always just about getting everybody on the same page and, more importantly, keeping them there.
Mm. Look, Rudes was pretty pissed off last night, but I tell you, he was also pissed off. John Aloisi, fuming after Western United lost 3-2 at home to Adelaide United, slammed the referee after the game, Sean Evans. Interesting, when I went to Google Aloisi and Evans, an article from 2016 popped up when he was at Brisbane Roar, where he was doing the exact same thing. So that rivalry, you know, we talk about the Sydney Derby going back 10 years. That rivalry really goes back 6. Guys, you know, you were down there in Melbourne. Joey, I'll come to you on this one. What do you think about when a coach slams a referee? Where is the line on that one?
Did
Aloisi cross it?
That is the ultimate question. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a fine incoming for Aloisi, because, I mean, like, he's come in and he's immediately launched into the statistic of we've had Western United has had Sean Evans 12 times and they have never won a single game with him, which, well, I mean, there's an inference there. Like, you know, like I did follow up in the press conference if he was inferring anybody, and he says, no, I'm just telling you the stat. But there's an inference there surrounding making that statement. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there is a fine coming, you know, Aloisi's way, or he's getting a talking to as a result of that. I mean, I actually have pulled up the stats now. So, yeah, Sean Evans refereed Western United 12 times. Western, 0 wins, 3 draws, 9 losses. They have a 75% losing record with Sean Evans as a referee. The next worst side with Sean Evans as referee is the Phoenix, with 51% of their games lost under Sean Evans. But the Phoenix also win 41% of their games with Sean Evans as a referee, as opposed to Western United's nil. And
stay tuned next week when we bring you every single referee in the comp and their win percentage for every single team.
I mean, I can do that right now. Ultimate A-League keeps track of them. No. Okay.
I would rather sit in silence.
But it did get me thinking, like, because I mean, there was like at the extent of the reason for Aloisi's irked state was because Nestor Irinkunda probably should have been awarded a second yellow card and sent off, but he hadn't been, and that served to change the game. He didn't have any complaints about the penalty. He gave the classic "I haven't seen it yet" answer, which is coach speak for it was a penalty, but I'm not going to come out and say that.
And by the way, can I just say, at 2-2, it was a dumb tackle to make. It was not in a dangerous area. This wasn't, you know, preventing a goal or anything. Tamaki Mai, you know, we gave him a lot of compliments last season. He's a very good defender. And I think, you know, obviously we've heard stories, he's a really good person as well. So no kind of direct shots to him, but dumb mistake to make, especially when Weston had been struggling. Damano, what did you make of
Hold on. The point I was getting at was,
don't read out any more percentages.
No percentages, but it is the question of where is the line with the referees, because clearly there was a controversial call that was obviously controversial that Aloisi had an issue with, but then he started bringing up stats with the inference there. So there is a formal compliance process that Football Australia has brought in where coaches can get accurate feedback about why decisions have been made. But I did ask Aloisi if he was going to use that, and he just said it's not helpful. So, but it did, like, where is this line? It got me questioned. I don't have the answer, but it's got me thinking, where is this line?
Where I think, like,
because I haven't done a referee's course, but I'm not a chef either, but I can tell you if the food tastes like shit. It's the same thing. Like, I haven't done a referee's course, but I can tell that some decisions are wrong. How much am I allowed to criticize before it turns into abuse?
Well, I think the line is, I don't think you should be able to say this individual cost us the game, because A, it's bullshit. All right. Unless, I don't know, you got 100 penalties given against you. Like, you just, Western United performed poorly after they went 2-0 up, obviously. So that's,
well, yeah. Issue. As Matthew Pappas says, like, Western absolutely shit the bed. This defeat is on them. But it gets to the broader philosophical question about what is the right thing to do.
But I have him. I have no problem with him bringing up those stats, because they are like official numbers. Like, we can't just be like, oh no, you're not even allowed to say the numbers. So I don't have a problem with that. And I think, you know, I just don't like that this person cost us the game, and any kind of thing that would maybe incite abuse to the referee, you know, which you don't want to have. You don't want to create it, make life harder for referees than it already is. But look, enough referee chat. Unless, Debano, you want to add something to that. Tell me what your thoughts were on Adelaide. Tell me about Adelaide.
I mean, just quickly about Adelaide. I mean, you know what? Like, Nestor, for even though Aaron Kunda, you know, probably should have been sent off, I mean, his impact was unbelievable again. And Adelaide's credit as well, coming back from 2-0 down, is
beautiful.
Something that's been pissed off that. Like, it's a bloody good effort. I mean, they looked cooked. They looked done. And to their credit, they fought back brilliantly. And you know what? Any side that's up 2-0 and loses, you have to be looking at yourselves first, especially in those sort of moments. I think when someone like, you know, John would probably sit down and look at maybe the review, I think he'd probably say, all right, look, there were moments in this game where we probably should have defended a little bit better. We made some dumb decisions, especially, you know, the my challenge was, as you said, just not, you know, like, especially that stage of the game, barreling into someone from behind, very, very uncharacteristic from Tamaki Umai as well. Because early going, I mean, Western United looked pretty good. I mean, Noah Botic scored, Alexander Prijevic had them humming, they were up 2-0 and it looked like happy days. But to Adelaide's credit, they didn't give up. They fought. Once one went in, that was that. So, you know what? Like, it's a couple wins on the bounce for them, and they're starting to build some momentum at the right stage. I mean, it might not be necessarily convincing results, like 9-1 from the first minute to the 90th minute, but they're starting to get some momentum. They're getting points on the board. And considering how tight things are on this table, getting points is the most important thing. You know, getting yourself in a position where you can get that home elimination final or whatever else, that is integral.
Let's bring in Josh Parrish, who's joining. Josh, your thoughts on the kind of Western United Adelaide game yesterday? I was just going to say, really nice moment for Noah Botic to score his first A-League goal. I think, you know, those of us who've kind of followed the young Socceroos, and there's always been a bit of promise about him being kind of one of the better players from his generation. So really great to see him play. And also kind of your thoughts on Adelaide. You once dubbed, and one of my favorite coaching nicknames was the human handbrake, Carl Viet. But do you feel like they're kind of playing a little bit better now? Is the introduction of certain players improving their football?
Well, starting with Western, I thought it was striking to see Prijevic and Botic starting up front together. The twin peaks of Western United. I credit to Debano, by the way. He's been pushing Botic's case for quite some time now as an option there. And it's come to fruition finally. He's looked promising in fits and starts and cameos. And you could see that was just a massive weight off his shoulders. Like, he just broke down crying, I think, when he scored. Like, awesome.
Save it to the end of the game a little bit.
There's a good story. There's a touching story behind that. Yeah.
Okay. Can we?
His
grandfather. I dedicated the goal to his grandfather who passed away. So he gave a halftime interview with Tim Morgan and spoke about it. He said they dedicates all his goals to his grandfather, and it was a touching moment, first ever goal. So the emotions got the better of him in that moment.
Yeah.
All right. Well done. Also,
I'm glad I let interrupting me that because I was just going to I saw something. Wasn't it for his grandfather? I should have just shut up. Yeah.
Good lessons for everyone in life. Josh, thoughts on Adelaide?
Adelaide. Well, first of all, I think TNC probably owes a collective apology to Ibasuki. I mean, we were memeing him relentlessly.
Josh, you You're the biggest Adelaide hater on
Ante.
This.
All right. I might owe an apology to George Blackwood, but that's a different story.
That's more of a legally obligated kind of thing. Iwasuki, I mean, one of those, a couple of touches in the lead up, he actually ballooned the chance over the bar in the end, but there was a couple of touches in the lead up to a chance in the first half where he was like just balletic. It was Iwasuki. Like, unbelievable. You know, he's a lot lighter on his feet than he looks.
He's got good feet for a big man.
Literally. I think different midfield composition, Zach Clough being actually fit and contributing have been massive, massive factors. Dorigo getting more minutes, Alagic getting more minutes. I think the look of this team, the feel of this team has changed a little bit and they're not just cross-spamming all the time. But I still think they do their best work in transition, which is hardly, you know, a unique trait in the A-League. But, you know, if you defend well against them, I think they will resort to sort of spamming crosses. And the fact that they looked good in attack against Western, late in the game anyway, probably doesn't tell you too much about Adelaide's overall ceiling. Like, they Western were in disarray. Like, you look at the shape when they lost the ball and all that stuff. It was just plays everywhere. It didn't look like they had a formation sometimes.
Dabana?
Is this Josh Parrish right now? Is Josh Parrish for Shaquille O'Neal right now?
For the people listening on the podcast, it's the meme of I owe you an apology. I wasn't really familiar with your game. Well done to Shaq. Josh, are you giving an official apology?
Yeah, I mean, he's proved us wrong.
Don't back down after one game.
No. It hasn't just been one game. I mean, ever since the start of this season, you think about his goal he scored. Was it like an overhead kick or something in the cup that he scored?
Yeah, they love him down in Adelaide.
He's turned it around pretty quick. So
here's a couple of questions for you guys that we got sent in via Twitter. Big Bad Wolf asked, do you think Aloisi will see out the season or are his days numbered? And then Jules 334, what is going wrong at Western United? What needs to be fixed? What do you guys think? Aloisi, would you all pick him to stay until the end of the season? He's obviously won them the championship last year, so...
You can't fire Aloisi.
You're not going to fire him.
No one thinks they should move on him.
Western United have made their bed, and now they have to sleep in
it. It was a great bed last year.
Now they need to change the sheets, but they're stubborn about it. So
yeah. No, but like Stolt, you're absolutely right there. They had a great season last year. This is the other side of the coin that you get with Aloisi. Last year, he rode what was the oldest squad in the league to the championship. They found the game style that worked for them. Teams didn't have an answer. They weren't forced to adapt all that too often, and they won the championship. He got the team humming really well internally. The locker room was a fantastic place to be. That all worked out really well. But there's obvious downsides with that. Once again, Western United are still the oldest team in the league. Their average age, weighted by minutes played, is 31 years old. This season,
they were old last season, they're older this season now. I know, but this is
this is the flip side. If you're going to rely on these veterans, it can go really well or it can go really badly. Like, we saw what happened at Brisbane.
Scott found out, and that Priovic didn't have a good start to the season, and they were interrupted with that. Who was amazing, has fallen off a cliff. If LaCroix
all their old players that played really well, there's the natural decline. Things start, but don't start bouncing their way. Their tactics get found out.
I just think it's like super easy to say, like, they're a year older and they're playing badly, so therefore...
Well, it's super easy because it's accurate.
I don't know if it is, because the other thing as well is, like, we always compliment, Alex Wilkerson came back into the Sydney FC team and look how good he is. Even older than all of them.
We were ready to sack Steve Corica three weeks ago, and his team is the second oldest in the league. You are going to get this bipolarity with aging squads.
That's different, though, I think, with Alex Wilkinson's style, because Alex Wilkinson is still a very, very handy player for his age. Like, I mean, he's just one bloke,
not the entire team.
Yeah. So I think either way, Western United that as a club need to have a few questions to ask from an on-field standpoint right now. Because to my knowledge, I don't think that Aloisi has a contract beyond this season. I don't think that they've officially announced beyond the 2 years that he signed at the start of last season, the extension. I mean, remember Joey in the grand final last year when he was, you know, show me the money, you know, you guys got to ask Jason and Chris as to whether that deal's coming through. Nothing's been formally announced unless it has and we haven't heard anything. We don't know what's going to happen beyond this point. But I do think that Western United will give him the chance to go again next season. But I think that the squad definitely need to ask a lot of questions about the squad build. And I think what we saw in January was the start of a regeneration of this squad, of players moving on, starting to potentially look to start, not what I'd call a rebuild. To an extent, it is a bit of a rebuild because the guys that they did sign have all been signed to long-term contracts. Like Michael Roos is on like a 3-year deal. I think Rami Nazarene's on a 3-year deal. Connor O'Toole, I think, is on a 2-year deal. And we saw, you know, them start to get rid of guys that weren't getting minutes. I think at the end of this season, there's going to be a lot of hard questions that need to be asked about, you know, where's this squad going? Do we need to look at potentially integrating some more youth? Do we need to look at bringing in some younger players and bring this whole squad profile down? But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very tough because a lot of these guys have been seeing a lot of minutes this season. So, you know, it really depends how this season plays out because, as we've said so many times on this podcast, a couple wins for Western United and suddenly they're right back in the hunt again. So is that, you know, something that we can factor in if they make finals this season? Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be some interesting conversation at the end of the season nonetheless, but they've got to have these questions. They've got to potentially, you know, look at the squad and think, is this what we're going to go long term?
Finals shouldn't. Half the league plays finals. Like, and it's really just, you know, like, this analysis, the inherent weaknesses and the inherent risks associated with this roster profile are going to exist whether they finish sixth or seventh. It shouldn't matter. One or the other shouldn't matter in that regard. Like, I agree. Aloisi absolutely should be retained for next season because he's earned the right with his championship, which is probably the one piece of results-based analysis you're allowed to engage in when a bloke actually wins a major trophy. But it's going to require, and it is going to require major work, and it is going to require a change in thinking. Because Aloisi came into Western, constructed the oldest squad in the league. He had the oldest squad in the league at Brisbane. It's going to require a change in thinking. And as Dabano said, honest introspection.
Some great comments coming in. I the Moment says Geelong proved champions are ageless. Yes. If you do an AFL reference and you agree with me, all good. It also says Aloisi is a great coach. You have to back him in and give him a fresh charter. So, yeah, I think he'll stay and be interested to see what he does next season and who stays on as well. Look, we are going to move on to the A-League women's, but
we can go to this one because Ben Smith is about to join us. He just got back from his run. I've sent him the link. He's setting up his mic so we can start and he'll jump in.
All right, in that case, I was led astray, run amok.
Check the private chat. It's in there.
All right, I'm trying to host as well. Shut up, Joey. Perth 2, Melbourne City 4. Should A-League belt holder Jordy Boyce be considered for the Socceroos? And who from the A-League should join him? So a couple of things actually I want to say about Melbourne City. Melbourne City obviously they're going to win this league, all right? Let's just say that's done. So they're now not competing with the league that they're in right now. They are now competing with the history books, and there are quite a few records that are in play for them. All right. The most points ever is 66. Sydney FC got that in a season with 27 games. So there's only 26 games this season. So it might be that they don't get the most points because they pretty much have to win every game from here on in, but maybe points per game, they might have the highest thing. The all-time top goal scorer in a single season is Bobo. Jane McLaren could break that record. They could also break the most goals in a season because they are steamrolling teams. Like, you know, we talk about the box office Jets. Some people talk about the box office Mariners. Melbourne City are pretty box office right now. The goals they're scoring are incredible. Matthew Leckie, that overhead kick, Jordy Boyce guarding on his right foot, dipping it top corner. This is incredible. I believe what Teo Pelizzeri said on the call. The beautiful run from Leckie to set up the fourth goal and then the standard ball for a right footer. You know, just an amazing kind of little reverse one there. But like Melbourne City are really impressing me at the moment. Matthew Leckie you know, the Make Australian Football Fund Society has two certified players right now. One is Max Burgess. The second is Matthew Leckie. Matthew Leckie is so much fun to watch. So do you guys think that this Melbourne City team could set historical records? I'll start with you, Josh.
Yeah, they're cooking right now. It's actually fantastic to watch, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, and it was so much better to watch at Macedonia Park with like packed stands behind them, even if they were all Perth fans and they weren't exactly cheering for the goals. It just looked so much better than a sort of half empty Amy Park. The goals looked better because they were in that kind of atmosphere. Yeah, they're playing so well. I mean, they scored 4 and 6 goals in their past 2 games, 3 in the game before that. Like, you can't really knock it. I'm super impressed with the way that Rado's got this team humming and has, dare I say, taken the handbrake off.
5th gear, baby.
Yeah, like, it's honestly exhilarating to watch this team kind of in full flow. And Leckie is hitting that peak that we thought he was capable of when he signed, and he had those sort of teething problems at City initially. That overhead kick was just ridiculous. But I reckon the Geordie Boss goal could be the goal of the season in the A-League. Yeah. Just degree of difficulty, weaker foot, a left back. I don't know if you get bonus points if you're a left back, you're scoring that. But
even to win the goal of the month for Melbourne City right now is very difficult, because Leckie just
scored. Is this going to be like that Premier League December 2006 compilation video with like the Essien volley and all these, Van Persie? It's just going to be like the all-time greatest goal of the month comp.
Van last week, you know, he scored an excellent, excellent goal. We should welcome into the stream Ben Smith, who was there to win the City Persie. He's wearing, for those of you watching listening to a podcast, he's wearing a Phoenix Suns hat. Is that correct? Is that the hat that you have on your head, Ben?
That is correct. Okay. I see you're a fellow hoops head, Nick Stoll.
Yeah, so look.
I'm just going to have to defer to Lil B, the based god, for my thoughts on all this.
Why? What did he say?
F Kevin Durant.
Okay.
All right. He released a diss track in like 2012.
Can I just say, I've sat through Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris attempting to play basketball. I deserve a bit of Kevin Durant in my life.
Man, I'm a Timberwolves fan. You can piss off with your shit.
This is the ESPN portion. Watch your ESPN content. Watch your NBA content on ESPN.
I mean, so much of sports fandom is competitive suffering, isn't it?
Would LeBron James be the top scorer in the A-League if he played soccer?
I mean, he'd be the top scorer in the World Cup. We'd win a World Cup if LeBron James played.
If France had Rudy Gobert at centre-back, they wouldn't have lost to Argentina.
I'm pretty sure Melbourne Victory had Rudy Gobert up front in that Grant Brebner season.
Cooked Rudy Gobert, Ben Smith. I think Messi would absolutely send Rudy Gobert, but break his ankles. I think that there'd be no doubt about it. But it might be worse.
Look, before we do the 2005 redraftables, let's get back to A-League football. All right. And let's focus a bit. Ben, you were there at the game. I believe you were at the game. Is that correct?
I was indeed. Okay.
That's good. In the makeshift press box.
The makeshift press box, which was obscured by George the Glory Gorilla yesterday at times.
Please do an A-League all access on that.
Not going to lie.
Oh my! Okay, so before the game, I had the minute silence.
Can you imagine an A-League all access on George the Glory Gorilla?
Before the game yesterday, they had the minute silence for the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria, which I think everyone's kind of.
Please tell me you didn't stand there like Whitney solemnly.
George, they were having a minute silence, and George the Glory Gorilla had his head bowed, looking very as solemn as an A-League mascot has ever looked. And I was like trying not to laugh, because it was obviously a very, minute silence for a very tragic event. But George the Glory Gorilla was joining in on the minute silence, and it was, I was like, I wanted to get out my phone and take a picture of it, but I also felt it wasn't the moment.
It's one of the great, like one of the great Twitter accounts is mascots observing minute silence. The old timer is the West Ham Hammer observing. I think it's Remembrance Day or something. Oh my goodness!
Like, it's just what, there's could, the pie mascot that's like, you know, like the big pie.
Or even Gunnosaurus. There's like one of Gunnosaurus looking very, very sad. What
isn't there one of? There's a water heater that's a mascot for a club, isn't there?
That's West Brom, yeah. There's a boiler.
There's a sponsorship for a mascot like that.
Sorry,
is it Hamilton in Scotland who had that weird sun? No, there's one of him.
I think it might be Kilmarnock.
Anyway, no, look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Let's stay focused. Guys, under 90. Look, here's what I would just quickly say is that if you somehow work in like an A-League club and you listen to this, and we know quite a few people do, and you have something to do with where the mascot stands during minute silence, please just get the mascot to be in the tunnel. Like, please just keep the mascot off the field. There's no, like, no one is going to be like, did you guys see the other night? George the Glory Gorilla did not pay his respects to the people of Turkey and Syria. This is an hour. No one's going to care. Just, you know, let him come out for the
footy. George is getting cancelled.
We should get back to the footy.
Ben, how impressive were Melbourne City up front? And tell us about, you know, Perth Glory. I think they fought pretty well. And, you know, it was really nice when David Williams scored that goal and it was exciting. But your thoughts on the game?
I know I heard you guys touching on it, but I thought Jordy Boss actually stood out more than any of Melbourne City's front three. I mean, you know, it was just a heap. I think that's the first time I've seen him in the flesh. And, you know, Macedonia Park isn't great for tactical analysis from a press box. It's like quite low and set back, but he really stood out. And
Was he the closest player to you? Is that why?
No, he was on that was the thing. He was on the far side in the first half and he still stood out, which was the really impressive bit. He had like two or three
Ben
runs.
Has really poor sight and he could just see one, the closest player on his side. And he's just like, wow, that fullback's amazing.
Like,
and
then he looks like a blur and Lecky looked like a blur. Actually, come to think of it, all the Melbourne City players look like blurs.
Specsavers, the latest sponsor of the podcast.
I actually thought that Melbourne City, maybe this was just kind of from where I was sitting, but I didn't think Melbourne City's front three were that impressive. I thought
was
that
George
McLaren
the
went
gorilla blocking the front three. Was that also the issue?
I mean, Lecky had his moments. Obviously, the goal was great, and he looked by far the best out of their front three. I thought McLaren was pretty quiet. I thought Glory did a pretty good job of containing his threat, and there weren't too many kind of times he got the ball in the box. I thought Naboot had his moments, but there was a noticeable improvement when Tilio came on late in the game. I thought he gave him that extra dimension. Actually, I believe he won the corner, which led to Lecky's scissor kick as well. Well, bicycle kick, yeah. But yeah, it was the sort of performance you kind of expect to see from Melbourne City. I thought Glory did a decent job of, you know, not letting them completely run the show.
Look, we'll come back to you on Perth in a second, but while we're talking about Jordy Boyce, can I just ask you guys, Socceroos contender? Do we want him in the squad, the latest squad? Dabana, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think he goes. I mean, like if we're comparing comparing to the two left backs that went to the World Cup. I mean, Joel King made his first appearance for Sydney as a substitute yesterday, as his manager still playing.
He's ahead of Joel King right now.
You know, like literally, like, I mean, he should be there. And I think he's in form. He's earned his spot. And I think that it'd be so stiff to miss out for the March window.
But another player, is there any other players that you guys think should be kind of in the contention from the A-League that maybe hasn't been in contention in previous? Because obviously probably Goodwin's going to be there. You know, you'd imagine Cummings will be there. You imagine Lecky and McLaren will be there. You imagine Burgess probably going to be there, Captain Norris.
But the question is, it's because it's the start of a new four-year window, a new World Cup cycle, the question needs to be asked, what exactly are the objectives going to be? There's an international window in March. I think there's another one in June. The question needs to be, what are the objectives of these windows? What is Graham Arnold trying to accomplish? Because
Asian Cups.
Exactly. Is it preparing for the Asian Cup? Is it just teeing players up for that? Is it combination of doing that and trying to integrate younger players at the very start of the window that you envision starting for you during World Cup qualification and then the World Cup itself. There's a series of questions that you need to be asking with this. If you are looking to just integrate players now for down the line, then you obviously skew younger, and that's when you can start thinking about, does somebody like a Caleb Neuwenhoff deserve to at least get
like Cameron McKenzie just said in the comments. 100%.
Like, yeah, somebody like Caleb Neuwenhoff. The only possible drag on that is that there already is a ton of young central midfielders in the Socceroos national setup, so you might want to maintain continuity there. But these are, I think, the questions that you need to be asking. It's not just about whether or not a player deserves it based on their form. There's a whole list of other objectives. Well, you need to be thinking about this as a 4-year cycle, a 1-year macro cycle before the Asian Cup as well.
Even if it wasn't,
Jordi Bosz deserves to go, because right now, I think he's in the top 2 or 3 left backs going around for Australia.
Well, and one of the tough things as well is sometimes, you know, you say like a player in the A-League is performing really well, but the question is, who drops out? That's sometimes the thing that we have to factor in. But is there any other names that people would like to float in this kind of conversation? As people in the A-League who haven't been kind of considered in the past, who you'd like to see in there? I would like to see Ben Halloran. Dabano, you got anyone else?
I saw Jack Tohill's comment here about Sammy Silvera and Edmund as well. Yep. I think he's someone that we need to keep an eye on. I think he's going to keep getting better. I think he's someone, maybe not for the next 12 months, but I think as time goes on, I reckon he's someone to certainly keep an eye on. And the other one, other two I've got, Joe Gauchy, backup goalkeeper. And I reckon Aidan O'Neill as well at Melbourne City. I know that we're talking about sixes being quite deep, but I reckon he's someone to certainly keep an eye on. I think his stocks are rising. So there's certainly a couple of players that I'd consider bringing in the next four-year cycle.
Josh, Iran Kundu, do you think it's a bit too early for him, or have you seen enough?
I think the coaching staff at Adelaide and the national team setups are being cautious with how quickly they promote him. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, trying to manage his minutes, manage his development, keep his feet on the ground, that kind of stuff. He's not been considered even for young Socceroos selection because he's got Joey's commitments coming up. So they're not exactly promoting him ahead of his age. Whether that's the right thing to do or not, I don't know. But they're keeping him with the Joeys. So if they're not selecting him for the young Socceroos and promoting him out of Joey's contention, then they're not going to select him for the senior national team. It's just not going to happen yet. I love watching Iran Kundu, but he hasn't been playing significant minutes for Adelaide. I think perhaps in a year or so, we can start talking seriously about which age level in the national team setup he should be playing with.
Yeah. Sam asked, door closed on Borrello? I don't think so. I think Borrello, if his form really kind of steps up as well, I think he's a very good player and I think he can play at that level. Ben, we should probably talk back about Perth and kind of how it's all going there.
I had one more name, just potentially. Very deep position. Angus Thurgate.
Oh, I do like Thurgate.
Again, but all these central midfielders, you know.
Exactly, that's the problem. Like,
Max Ballard, you know, but he's not going to get a call up.
You mispronounced it, Max Burgess.
I thought you were going to tell me he was French or something, and it was Max Ballard.
Maximilian.
Actually, talking of Mariners players, it's way too soon. It's way too soon. He's played like 15 games or something. But
I think I know. Yes. I was thinking about that on
Friday.
Is he
going to be the next Mariners centre-back that TNC overhypes?
Honestly, there was one time where he brought the ball down and, like, you know, he was playing centre-back and he like dribbled two players and then like sprayed a beautiful pass. Instantly, I was like, ooh, Triantis. I'm liking it. I'm buying his stock. I'm definitely buying his stock. Dabano, anyone else you want to throw in?
Between him and Popovic, I mean, that's the two centre-backs we are looking at really long-term. Two 19-year-olds.
I think bringing Tony Popovic out Tony of Popovic is probably a big risk.
For God's sake, where's the maturity in this buddy podcast?
What about the Popovic kids? Let's get them in.
Why not?
Four Popovic's. I'm seeing double here.
Ben, you, Perth, let's get back to him because two Popovic kids played there.
And Gabby Popovic actually got called up to Young Socceroos this week. So there you have it. just on Jordy Boss, I asked Rado Vidicic after the game about him, and he said he definitely thinks he should be in the next Socceroos. He thinks he deserves a Socceroos call up and hopes Graham Arnold selects him. No complaints for me. He's brilliant. If we're talking about Perth-based Socceroos bolters, technically he's tied to New Zealand at the moment, but Keegan Jelicic, he is a baller. He was born in Queensland as well.
So he's ours.
He's ours, pretty much. He's been really good this year. And I know Glory fans have been saying they need a 10. Jelicic is a 10. He's 20 years old. Give 20-year-old creative attacking midfielders like adequate sustained game time and you will reap the rewards. If you bring another 10...
at Western United.
Zakovich isn't going to play with two tens. Play with Jelicic as a single ten, and he'll develop well. He's already developed well in like 10 straight games. So,
Ben, is there a feeling that Perth have kind of exceeded expectations this year, especially kind of at Macedonia Park as well? Is there a feeling that it's going a little bit better than expected, or at least there's good vibes around the place?
I think so. I tipped them to kind of challenge for finals, so they're kind of right where I thought they might be, just because I liked some of the additions they brought in. But the surprising thing is, and it has kind of taken its toll on a few weeks, but some of the additions they brought in have not been available. Like Aaron McInniff's been injured. Salim Khalifi has been really, I think he's been an awesome pickup. Unfortunately, he's hurt his foot now and will be out for, I believe he's in a moon boot, but they were hopeful that he'll be back before the end of the season. I think Mark Beavers has been a good pickup. Ryan Williams has been a good pickup. Adam Taggart, I think once he gets going, will be a good pickup. David Williams, he's certainly exceeded expectations. He's been just very steady up front. And that was a fantastic header last night to equalise. And
beautiful.
That was fantastic. He's been a very pleasant surprise. And I think, Zakovich has been very strong on the fact that this is a rebuild. He mentions rebuild a lot. He mentions a lot of phrases a lot. He mentions that pressure is a privilege a lot. He says that, he always thanks for fans and members. He speaks about how they're rebuilding. I don't think.
I believe he also says, George the Gorilla, get out of my way, mate. We're trying to coach a team right here.
He also says, referee, please let my player go to the bathroom. He's
He did actually get a bit annoyed in the post-game presser because he said he tried
what
to
did you ask him?
It was, I believe it was Justin Chadwick from AAP who...
Straight under the bus.
shout out to Chatters, the only man who can get away with wearing thongs in a press conference. He's a god amongst men. We love Chatters. So Ruben said he tried to
sell thongs for his feet. Sorry.
what did Ruben say?
So Ruben said he tried to send Adam Taggart and Jacob Dowse on slightly earlier. If you were watching the game, they came on, I think, directly after Melbourne City had scored. Ruben was saying that he had asked a couple of minutes before, next out, to the assistant referee so he could get a sub. And then he said the fourth official spent 2 to 3 outs fumbling with the scoreboard to actually get, the substitutes on the pitch. And in that time, Melbourne Victory actually scored. So he wasn't too happy about that. Now,
good for Melbourne Victory to score there.
It was fantastic. There's only one team in Melbourne, isn't there? At least that's what their fans have been trying to tell me all these years. I feel like it's starting to wear off. Obviously Glory didn't concede because they weren't, Glory conceded because they didn't defend well, not because those subs were unable to come on. But it is a bit of it's a very minor kind of sliding doors moment, and Zakovic was a bit annoyed about it.
Yeah. Joey, you want to talk a little bit about Rado Vidicic?
Well, before I get there, I did have a question for Ben. Now, Ben, last night, Macedonian Park, it was a sellout. I saw online, no tickets sold at the gate. You had to rock up with a ticket. Now, and it's been regarded Fortress Macedonia, breached for the first time by City, but City tend to beat everybody, so we'll give them a pass. Now, HBF Park is obviously undergoing renovations for the Women's World Cup that is going to make that a better facility. very difficult to turn down a better facility moving back in. However, we've also heard numerous times in the past Tony Sage talking about how expensive it is to rent HBF Park, how much there is a drain on his coffers. And I can't imagine the rent's going to go down anytime soon if the state government's spending all of this money on upgrading it for the Women's World Cup. How viable is Macedonia Park with a bit more money sunk in for upgrades as a long-term home for Perth Glory?
I think you'd need a fair bit of upgrades. You'd need some sort of permanent stand. You'd probably ideally want to fill in the other side. Still, why are you laughing?
You need some sort of permanent stand, like just like the basics of like stadiums. You need,
you probably need two goals and a pitch. Yeah.
Those don't have to cost hundreds of millions of dollars.
Look, I mean,
yeah, we've seen around the world, they get thrown up for on the cheap around the world.
I mean, Glory.
I'd just say it's cool that Perth are there at Macedonia Park and it's selling out and it's going well and stuff. This is also one of the historical teams of Australian football we're talking about. They can't be playing out of a 5,000-seater stadium. You know, I know that their crowds have struggled in the past and da da da. But I think just based on their history and also their kind of their presence, they should be aiming for a bigger stadium than that.
I'm torn because on one hand, I think that Macedonia Park has been very good for them. There's been a lot of goodwill. The club have kind of done a good job at making it their home. Sterling have been really good at hosts, very courteous hosts. The players and, you know, Ruben Zakovic have spoken about how they enjoy playing there, how the crowd are closer to the pitch, how it's, you know, the atmosphere is better because it's, you know, 4,000 people in a 4,000-seat stadium as opposed to 6,000 people in a 22,000-seat stadium. And, you know, it kind of feels a bit like Perth Oval used to in the NSL days. Now, I was very young in the NSL days, but I remember going to NSL games at Perth Oval and it felt like a carnival. You know, maybe it was just the smell of chicken treat and cheap beer and, you know, and there was a real kind of DIY kind of
sorry,
feel.
I thought you were going to say the smell of the gorilla.
I mean, I'm not sure how often that that costume gets washed, so maybe it was the smell of the gorilla. But there was a real Perth Oval had this kind of carnival feel to it. So on one hand, I kind of like the fact Macedonia Park has that feel to it. On another hand, Perth Glory, the only professional football club in the state, they should be aiming to do better than a 6,000-seat boutique stadium. They should, maybe if they went somewhere in the middle, funded their own stadium for, you know, which is 12,000, you know, where it's still small, but like they have a monopoly on the football fan, well, the round ball fans in this state. They should be setting the bar higher than just a 6,000-seat stadium.
Peter Allen says the facilities are very basic as a novelty is great this season, but long-term that novelty will wear off. Joey, please be quick, but talk about Radovan Vidicic.
I mean, just we're all talking about how box office Melbourne City is now playing at the moment. I said this would happen. Like, it's just the building blocks. Rado's come in and he's adding the building block of telling them, all right, you guys know the system, go cook. And it turns out that when you're funded by the CFG and you've got more money than God, you can bring in some pretty good players, even under a salary cap, that can cook very well. So I don't think this should be surprising at all. I think within the very narrow, just within the prism of Melbourne City, I think the Dario Vidicic hiring has been a good one because he's not going to change the system, but he's going to supplement it. And right now we're seeing what the supplementation can do.
Yeah.
I have a quick question for Ben.
All right.
What do you think about the scheduling of Glory home games? Because I just noticed that after next week against the Mariners, they will have played 7 home games since the start of the season. Is that just a bit much for people kind of in a row? They've only played like one away game in the space of eight games.
I'm not too sure. I mean, last night was a sellout, so I don't think the magic of a home slate has worn off.
I guess more the question is more once they have like a really long away run of games, does the feeling kind of dissipate?
I Not sure. I don't think so. I think that they are now at a place as a squad where they will be more competitive on the road, and I think that will kind of keep people's attention for when they are back in WA.
Quick comment coming in just kind of on what you were saying, Joey. Lazar 11 might be early doors, but Kiz Norbo getting found out in France. Spankings every week. Don't know how long they'll put up with that.
I think I have actually read some reports coming out of France that Kiz Norbo is sort of was sort of brought in for a project and he'll be there next season regardless because they see Kiz Norbo as the start of a project.
Yeah, but that's what everyone says before they lose.
Start of a project in League Two.
I'm just trying to be fair and balanced. It's fact. I wrote that. Right.
Fact?
Let's move on. Let's move on. A-League Feminina. We have a change in the A-Liga belt. Jordi Boyce, of course, holds it in the men's. But in the women's, we have a change. Joey, please let us know what the change is.
Well, the belt was on the line in Sydney FC Canberra, and while Canberra's winning meant that we have a new belt holder, and we were chatting in the group chat about who from Canberra we wanted to give the belt to. We sort of settled on three potential options. There was Michelle Heyman, fourth minute goal, released at the time for the day. She came out afterwards and said that we stuck it right up them because they shit-talked us in the week. She didn't exactly say that, but that's what she was saying. Grace Jarlay, probably because of a bit of NPL Victoria bias, but also because I think she did pretty well in the midfield there, winning that midfield battle. Admittedly, a Mackenzie Hawkesbury less midfield for Sydney FC. And Ellie Brush, who did a very fine job defensively marshalling Sydney's high-powered attack, popped up with the 87th minute winner. How are we going to decide the tiebreak? Well, Ellie Brush liked one of Stoll's tweets saying that Max Burgess should be called up for the Socceroos. So Ellie Brush is the new A-Liga Feminina belt holder.
Look, that's how you get ahead in the game. Look, about a month to go in the A-League Feminina this season. Dabana, you just going to give us your thoughts on kind of how the season is going and where it's heading at the moment?
Oh, well, Western United did it again, didn't they? Came back from a goal down. They're proving to be a lot of fun. Can't count them out whenever they're behind in a game, it seems. It's actually Joey's tweet, which made onto Dub Zone yesterday in regards to the stat, they'd be sixth if games ended after 45 minutes. But, I mean, they're the second half queens and they're the comeback queens, as Teo Pelletieri as well coined them on Dub Zone. And credit to them. I mean, they sucker punch City. They hit them on the break, got a deserved winner in the end. I know Sally James obviously made that mistake, but nonetheless, good on them for turning that around after two straight losses. It was looking a little bit iffy after Jess McDonald left. So good on them. But the top four race is pretty tight now, guys. I mean, Canberra's back in the hunt. They were gone a couple of weeks ago after losing 5-0 back-to-back. They've won back-to-back games. Perth's winning at the moment, so they've got games in hand. They're still in the hunt. Ben, I'll get your thoughts on Perth as well in a sec too. Even Brisbane Roar is still hanging around. So it's going to be a fun end to the season. I mean, like, you know, as much as the top four, I think, will probably stay the same, maybe not in this specific order, teams will probably move around. I think that the gap between maybe Victory and Canberra, if Canberra can go on a bit of a run, and potentially even Perth Glory will close in the coming weeks. But Ben, I mean, Perth is still hanging around. I mean, Alex Aparkas was saying yesterday, like, they actually relish this position, like sort of doing it the hard way, going the long route, doing things a bit, you know, backs against the wall, every game's like a final, throwing around every cliche under the sun. But, I mean, can they do it? Do you think that there's enough, or have they left their run maybe a little bit too late?
It's going to be really tough. So their final three games, they play Melbourne City at home on March 26th. They play Sydney in Sydney on March 29th. And then they play Brisbane Roar in Brisbane on April 1st. So that is three games in 6 days to end the season, which is completely nuts scheduling, if you ask me. And if you ask Alex Aparkas, he will agree and probably have a few stronger words as well. It's going to be very tough. The margin for error is so small, and you know they do get El Amastro Antonio back, I believe, next game, and then but the loss of Riley Baisden is obviously, you know, huge. She was their best player in the first half of the season, but you know, thankfully they do have lots of depth in that area. You know, Sophia Sakalis, Alana Janchevsky, have both been really good. Susan Fonsonkam was, you know, I thought she was great last week against Western United. For me, it's just a question of if a defence can keep stringing together good performances like they did last week against Western United, where I think Liz Anton's been really good this year, and Kim Carroll is, you know, an elder statesman of the league and knows what she's about. I think I back them to score goals at this point. It's just, can they keep the goals out? And I think that's going to be crucial to their chances of reaching the top four.
Well, they're doing it right now because they're up 3-0, as Taurus lets us know in the comments against Newcastle Jets. Joey, you had a point on the top four.
Well, it's very interesting. The 3-0 win, if Perth hold on and maintain the 3-0 win, their goal difference actually goes from -1 to +2. They are the only team in that top four race of Canberra, Brisbane Roar, Perth, Western Sydney, Adelaide, if we're being very generous, even though I think the Reds at this point are gone, to have a positive goal difference, which come the end of the season could be very important. Now, admittedly, fourth place Melbourne Victory have a goal difference of +5. So they're still behind the eight ball on that front. But that's something I think to keep in mind, because I do think Perth Glory are the most likely side to gate crash the top four race. We saw the final day of the last regular season. They were ever so close. They were basically Michelle Heyman shooting straight from playing finals football last season. They had a young group then. That young group's got another year into them and they're maturing. Alani Anchevsky, she keeps coming off the bench and dominating, hopefully, and scoring great goals. Sofia Sakalis there, right her. So I think they're the most likely ones to jump in. But the other question, of course, also has to be who falls out. Because right now, Melbourne Victory, the most likely side to. But Victory's problem really is they're not scoring enough goals. They keep drawing games. But they're about to get Melina Reyes back. And a fit and firing Melina Reyes, in the few games that she played to start the season, she was one of the best players in the competition. So I think that's going to be really interesting to watch moving forward. Sydney FC, two games in hand, they'll be fine. But Melbourne City and Melbourne Victory, 25 points, 22. They've played 13. All of a sudden, an adverse run of form. And it'd be very interesting because City at the moment can't buy a goal. They've scored more than one goal just in one game in like their past six or seven. They are really missing Maria Cardi Rojas. They'll get her back after the international break. Holly McNamara will come back after the international break. So they really need those two players to start firing because right now they've seen a lot of the ball. They're just not doing much with it.
Josh, you wanted to make a point on Western United.
Yeah, I was just thinking back to our season preview pod and where I picked them. And I picked them in the bottom four because I felt you had to.
Is there another apology coming?
No. I felt you had to assume that the the Shaq graphic has come back up for the podcast. You had to assume that the level of scouting and talent ID in the A-League Women's isn't so abysmal that a team with six or seven players who were playing NPL only last year can beat Sydney FC. You have to assume that that's not the case, but that's exactly what we just saw. So I guess you can read it two ways. You can say, oh, actually the depth in NPLW is way better than we thought, and the gap to bridge to get to A-League Women's standard, you know, isn't that big. Or you can say that a lot of players have just been flat out overlooked. And yes, playing together at the same club in Calder has obviously eased the transition for these players, and they've been well prepared through, you know, Western United having those like training camps, I suppose, talent development camps or whatever they called them with those players last season. But I mean, it doesn't say a lot for the standard of the A-League Women's in terms of talent ID in the NPL that a team can just sweep in with, you know, half a squad of these players and be top of the table. That's kind of, that raises question marks for me.
I tell you what also raises question marks is who is the genius commentator who said, as Torres pointed out, well done to the commentator for saying Ellie Brush has a good head on her shoulders.
Campbell Johnson.
Bravo.
Campbell Johnson. Congratulations Bravo. I'll see you tomorrow morning in the meeting and I'll pass it
Campbell,
on.
Campbell, that is magnificent. Let's quickly touch on the Pride round, which the A-Leagues are doing, and they've been well complimented. Totally different approach. A-Leagues praised for detailed Pride round plan. Joey, can you explain what they are doing and what the situation is?
effectively, yeah, they've been working on this for at least a year, I think. And well, Melbourne Victory and Adelaide United have been working for a lot longer, but they've been spending a significant amount of time with this. And because it's not just a matter of the A-Leagues have decided to whack a rainbow on some jerseys for the round that coincides with Mardi Gras and call it a Pride Rounds. They've actually put in significant amount of work with this. It gets confusing because it's also the name of the game that is being played between Adelaide and Victory, but Pride Cup, the organisation, they have partnered with Pride Cup, and they've been doing educational work for they've done educational work with every single playing group, men's and women's. They've done work with the executive staff of every club. They've done work with the coaching staff of every club. They've worked with Melbourne Olympic Parks Trust on training for security about providing a safe environment and recognising homophobic abuse and language properly, the insidious under-the-radar stuff, which, you know, a lot of people don't get, but people in the community do. Recognising that, they're going to roll that out nationally. They've rolled out more safety stuff in the online space around this money. A dollar from every ticket sold in the Pride Round is going to go to Pride Cup so they can implement their work at a grassrooting sports level. So I think, like, one of the big concerns when we were talking about Pride Rounds and the like in the past was that it would just be a token gesture, that it wouldn't be something that actually was done properly and helped instigate change. But I think from what I've seen, it absolutely, A, is being done properly, has been done with the best intentions, and actually has been done in a way so that it will not just let the LGBTQIA plus community know that they are safe, loved, and welcome in football, as every single person should be in football, but it's actually going to help change at a professional and grassroots level in the future.
Well done to everyone involved. We hope it is a great success, and we will focus on it when it comes around. Ange Postecoglou has been linked with the Leeds job. Guys, he's doing well at Celtic. He's a hero at Celtic. They're probably working out where they're going to put his statue. But the Premier
League...
You've
got to do a lot more at Celtic to own a statue than what Ange has done.
They're at least getting the measurements, all right? Relax. Ange is a legend of the club. But do you think, if offered the gig at Leeds, he should take it to Barno?
Two minds about this one. Really two minds about this one, because, like, you're taking over a team with how many games left in the Premier League season? About 17 games to go, and they're teetering on the edge of relegation at the moment. I mean, they don't have a bad squad, Leeds. I mean, they've got one of my favourite players running around in Wilfred Yonto every week, who, you know, Jesse Marsh wouldn't play because he said he's too young. Sounds familiar with some other coaches' philosophies. But in terms of, you know, like, you know, in terms of going forward, I think Ange should see out this season. I think see out the season with Celtic and make a decision after that, because I think he can, no disrespect to Leeds United, in terms of history and everything else with Leeds, massive club to go to. But I think an angle for a team that is probably performing at a greater level right now than Leeds United, I reckon he could probably aim for more of a mid-table Premier League side. Especially, like, you know, I mean, it is tough in this sort of coming in and being the saviour at this point of the season, a relegation sort of scrap. And honestly, I don't think they're going to bring him in, because, I mean, all the word is they're going to bring in Marcelo Gallardo, who's the old River Plate manager, and, you know, it looks like he's going to take over. So this conversation might be completely futile by the time, you know, in a few days' time.
Yeah, and you know what? That will actually be a really interesting appointment, because Gallardo has been an absolute, like, kind of legend of South American football with River Plate and won Copa Libertadores championships. But often maybe South American football, especially coaching, gets a little bit disrespected. So it'll be very interesting to see how he goes kind of at that level. Joey?
So it's finding a nice mid-table club. So somebody like a Chelsea or a Liverpool.
Well, Liverpool might be looking. Yeah. I would say, sorry, Joe, here we go.
No, do you have a gag?
No, I don't have a gag. I have a serious point.
Okay,
go for it.
You make your serious point, and then I'll try to be succinct.
Ange is many things, but he is not a firefighter. And I don't think coming into a club on the verge of relegation is really where his talent shine. I think he needs an off season in order to embed this stuff in. And also Leeds, I think, are a squad suffering from post-Bielsa burnout, because they had Bielsa murder ball in training, and then they brought in the guy from Red Bull Salzburg or whatever to to try and, oh, yeah, we'll give the players a break. We'll bring in a Red Bull coach as if he's not going to press like a madman too. So I think that this group of players at Leeds, you know, barring some of the guys who've been brought in more recently, are suffering from a bit of burnout, and it wouldn't be a surprise to see them go down. And I don't think Ange's kind of high-intensity game plan is going to, you know, refresh their energy levels at all, especially the mental load that they would have to take on in training, trying to learn his style of play. It doesn't seem like a good fit to me. But then again, you know, it's the Premier League. So,
Dabano, did you want to raise a point?
Yeah, just on Caden's comment here. Just now, Southampton just sacked Nathan Jones. So that's another
Premier League. Worse situation than Leeds.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. 110% nice weather, though. Worse. You know what? But it's natural that either way, even if he doesn't take the Leeds job, they will make a link. And there'll be someone in England who says, Ange Postecoglou would be great at Southampton.
It shows what kind of job that Ange is also doing. That is regularly linked with Premier League teams. So it is pretty amazing. But a lot of people in the comments are saying, Julian says Ange should stay at Celtic, in my opinion. Lazar 11 says, no way Ange leaves now. He's desperate for another crack at the Champions League. And I also kind of feel like for him, I actually think he got a bit unlucky in the Champions League this season. They came up against Real Madrid. They came up against a Shakhtar team that had Mudryk that, you know, went amazing against them and basically helped him get his massive move to Chelsea. And they came up against an RB Leipzig team who were doing very well this season as well. So that was a tough kind of introduction to the Champions League. And when you're going to be in pot four all the time, that is probably going to be tough. But I do think he needs to kind of, even if it's not necessarily in the Champions League going beyond the group stage, but getting that third place and going on a bit of a Europa League run also could be good for him. Joey?
I don't think Angie's going to leave Celtic mid-season. Angie's absolutely going to want to maximise as much time as possible to get into a new club, do a proper pre-season, bring a few players in that he needs with what will be a bigger budget if he's in the Premier League. I mean, Bournemouth outbidding the champions of Italy just shows you the stupid money that Premier League clubs now have access to. So he's going to want that. He's going to want to bring his staff in. He's liked to normally bring an Australian into his coaching gigs. It was, you know, there was an Aussie embassy set up at Yokohama and he's got Harry Kewell at Celtic. So I imagine he wanted to do that. If we're fantasy booking and just move into the Premier League, if that's what this is, if Sean Dyche keeps Everton up but then leaves in the off-season, I think that would be a very interesting landing spot, given that Everton actually do have resources and do have a history of challenging for Champions League. Another one.
What about Manchester City?
No. Another, maybe. Although I think Vincent Kompany has a lot of first refusal on that one. Another good one, shot. Spurs. If Conte leaves.
Knowing Spurs, they'll want to go higher NRI than knowing Spurs.
It wouldn't be the worst fit in the world in Spurs. It wouldn't be the worst.
I'm not criticizing the appointment, but you think the Spurs fans, like you think you have to convince the Spurs fans about, you know, bringing in, they've gone from just bringing the highest NRI coach possible.
Well, exactly. They've gone from Mourinho and Conte. Maybe they're in the mood for something a little different. Maybe they want to eat their vegetables.
Espirito Santo was like supposed to be the lower NRI coach. I know a different sort of football and it didn't work out very well. I know Ange is a very different coach.
I completely forgot about Nuno even coaching. That's how off the radar he was for me.
You know what? I think a club maybe maybe even West Ham would be perfect for if they stay up, because who knows how long Moisey's got in charge. He'd be great at West Ham, just quietly. I reckon that'd be awesome.
Where in the Premier League would Ange's particular brand of fan service play off the best? And why is it Liverpool?
Yeah, it's definitely Liverpool. Ben, you keep trying to yell to get into the conversation, but your internet's a bit dodgy. Get your point across and do it quickly.
No, I just wanted to say I want to see Ange at Tottenham, because watching Harry Kane try pronounce Postecoglou would be amazing.
I'd like to welcome in the new manager at Postecoglou.
Look, we're going to leave it there because we've only got a few minutes left. Guys, any final thoughts, any final plugs that you want to give ahead? Ben, you're the guest. I'll let you go first.
All right, well, you took too long. Unlucky.
Oh, that's a big one. That's good. Yeah. Does he say anything really crazy? Like, you know, 1,000 teams in the second division or something? I don't know.
Apparently, I'm lagging.
Yes.
You're lagging very much. And you know what? I haven't got time for any laggers. Brutal. Josh, anything to plug? Anything you want to say? Any last thoughts?
NPL Victoria's back, baby.
Hey. check it out.
Thursday night, Joey Lynch, Nick Devano, South Melbourne versus Moreland City, the season opener at Lakeside. Friday night on the Preston Lions Facebook page, myself and Nick Devano will be calling Preston Lions versus Pasco Vale in NPL 2, expecting a 4,000-plus crowd on Friday night. Whoa. It is going to be massive. At least 3K. At least 3K. Oh, it could, hey. We could get more people there than Macedonia Park, I'm just saying. And and on the Saturday, I'm calling Port Melbourne versus Avondale.
All right, check that out. Check your local guides. Really quickly, Jack Two Hill says, did we talk Jets victory? No, we didn't. But look, Jets, they're back, baby. Box office, they haven't lost in five. It's all going well. And victory, refer to every episode we've ever done this season about their problems. Guys, you got 30 seconds to get any plugs away. Go, Debano.
Head on over to keepup.com.au. You're going to probably have more stuff coming out this week. Also, we'll be making an appearance on the official Isuzu Uday League podcast tomorrow. So that's it for me. Yep.
Check it out. Joey, very quick. You got 10 seconds. Go.
Lots of stories, always at ESPN, The Guardian, Optus Sport, everywhere. We should also have a piece out in ESPN, Beginner's Guide to All Elite Wrestling. Thanks. Watch it on ESPN.